minus 10 seconds. The countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you a step farther out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.
And it is 19 hours UTC, Saturday, the 5th of May in the glory... No, I'm sorry, the 13th of May in the glorious future year of 2023. Not the 5th day of the 13th month. It might as well be. It's been a rough day. For entirely personal reasons that have nothing to do with anything I talk about here. And I won't go into it further, other than to say that anybody who seeks power and wants to have a force of loyal retainers over whom he holds the power of life and death, I suppose that perhaps such a person has never loved a dog, because that's what they are, you suppose, and, well, the trouble with wielding the power of life and death is that ultimately you have to exercise it, and if there's not something very wrong with you, if there's not something very wrong with you, it affects you. Anyway, that is all that I have to say about that right now. So, what is going on with me, and what is going on here in Germany, and what is going on in the world, and what am I going to talk to you about today? Well, as you can imagine, I'm in a bit of a disorderly state just at the moment, and I haven't been making notes as thoroughly as I should have. But I can bring you up to date on a couple of things that I've noticed just going around town. You know, I was talking last time, just at the end of the show, saying that the world has cause to know what happens when Germany is in a permanent state of emergency and not to like the outcome. And in case you're wondering what kind of signs that I've seen, well, as an example, literally a sign, a placard tacked up on a lamppost in the... Now that was wrong. So if anybody's in comm, there seems to be something going on with the SDF servers. Makes it difficult to get on, and I keep mistyping my password when the prompt finally does come up after about 5 minutes. Anyway, that's not what's important here. I was talking about going around town, there'll be placards posted up for people looking for a place to live. There's a little storefront around the corner here. It's not a full-fledged post office, but it's a place where they have post office boxes. And, you can pick up your mail if you have, and there's various other stuff, post office type stuff there, but it's not a staffed office. Well, there's a little thing in the window from a postal employee looking for a place to live. And I'm thinking, goodness, this is pretty bad. Because firstly, the post office is an enormous organization, which you'd think might have a welfare bureau just dedicated to doing things like making sure its employees have satisfactory places to live. But The really bad thing, in my opinion, is this, that in Germany, the postal privatization, one of the aspects of that is that the post offices are also banks, and you go into them, so the post office is also a Postbank office, and you go in, and there will always be a big sign for Immobilien, which is what Germans use to mean real estate listings. Furniture is Mobil, Möbel, like that, and then real estate listings are Immobilien, because of course you can't move them from place to place. These are the two categories of life, according to Germany. Anyway, and so the thought that an organization which is constantly involved in the trade of selling dwellings to members of the public has its employees posting up little handwritten placards in the window saying, hey, if you know of any place that would suit a person with the following characteristics willing to pay such and such amount for such and such kind of space, do let me know. Well, that certainly doesn't seem like a good situation to me. It doesn't seem like a good sign. But I was in the old town, well, the inner, Innenstadt, they call it. It's not doesn't have to be within the old city walls, but the area within the old city walls and then the area immediately around it. And I was looking for something entirely different, but I noticed a placard up on a pole saying that it's talking about, I'm an engineer, I'm looking to rent a place or buy, and I'm looking for some place in the Altstadt, in the old town, including the districts immediately around the old city walls, not just inside, various neighborhoods. And I'm looking for a place that's at least 65 square meters, and I'm willing to pay 1,400 euros a month, or buy, I'm willing to pay 720,000 euros. And I thought to myself, my goodness, this is not sustainable. And if the politicians here had any brains whatsoever, they would be looking at what they have to do about this, right? You know, and as I said before, you know, there was one of the political parties had a sign up saying, limit, you know, put a cap on rents and heating costs. And, well, capping rents, it might be difficult as a matter of constitutional law, but at least conceptually it's easy. Because rent is discretionary. On the other hand, heating costs, well, somebody's got to buy the fuel, and the cheapest source of fuel is banned in Germany now. Yeah. But one of the ministers of state in Bavaria has a perfectly good solution for that. He says everyone should just burn wood. He says everybody could just burn wood. I mean, I'm thinking, what kind of an idiot is this guy? Firstly, if everybody just burned wood, the trees in Bavaria wouldn't last very long. Secondly, the pall of smoke would be incredible. Thirdly, the idea that, oh, well, everybody has easy access, easy, fair, and equal access, right? You know, wood doesn't discriminate on the basis of cost. It's like, are you kidding me? Are you seriously saying this? I don't know if the guy's touched in the head, or if he just thinks that the people at large are idiots. But again, that's not a stable situation. Whether you have ministers of state promoting blatantly unsustainable policies because they think no one will notice, because they think the voters are all idiots, or whether the ministers of state themselves are idiots. One way or the other, this can't end well. I also saw that the Bavarian state is now proposing to build wind machines because it can't find private investors willing to do so, which echoes a development that MNW mentioned on his show which is Monday through Friday in this time slot, that the current British government has decided to exempt, essentially, wind turbines from most planning requirements, because there haven't been practically any new onshore wind machines built in Britain in the past few years, on account of the fact that you have to get permission from the local authorities. And local authorities have not been giving permission because people, as it turns out, don't like those things near them. People are concerned about the effect on the environment. People are unhappy about these 100-meter, 120-meter tall towers with 100-meter towers with 100-meter blade discs. I guess that's what it amounts to. People are made to feel uneasy by these things. And it's worth noting that in general, British nuclear power plants have not had cooling towers. Curiously, Calder Hall did, despite being located right on the seacoast, but most of the British nuclear power plants have not had cooling towers, because they've all been on the seacoast, or the Severn Estuary at least, with the exception of Trosfynydd in Wales, and I'm sure Gemlog will hate my pronunciation there, but I can't do any better at the moment. Trosfynydd in Wales, which was built on a hydroelectric reservoir, and in any case was a modest-sized station, one of the Magnox stations, and a larger-sized station there might require a cooling tower, but a larger-sized station is unlikely to be built there simply because it's in the middle of a national park, and to actually bring in the necessary materials and staff and so forth is quite a disturbance, which a lot of people would probably object to. But it's really quite interesting that they're willing to waive planning permissions to make it far, far easier to install wind machines, which have no hope of meeting their energy needs, and not nuclear plants. Now, I'm sure you've probably heard a big announcement about, oh, well, you know, for the first time ever, Britain got more of its electricity from wind than from gas. And that's lovely, really it is. But that didn't go on for very long. And here's the second point to consider about it. As I've repeatedly said, only 30% or so of the energy used, even in the most advanced countries, is consumed in the form of electric power. Much of it's consumed in the form of heat, etc. So, if Britain is going to, as they say they're going to, mandate heat pumps instead of gas heat, mandate battery electric automobiles, then they're going to have to massively increase their overall production of electricity. And doing that on the basis of wind machines a few megawatts at a time, rather than on the basis of nuclear plants 1400 megawatts at a time, you know, a 1400 megawatt nuclear power plant is worth considerably more in terms of what it actually produces for the grid than 1401 megawatt wind machines. In fact, it's probably worth more in terms of what it produces for the grid than 1,404 megawatt wind machines. In which connection, interesting little statistic here that at 8 p.m. on Wednesday evening, May 10th, there was 850 megawatts of solar power fed into the German grid. You may be wondering, 8 p.m.? Well, the answer is Germany lies at fairly high latitude, and in the evenings it stays light quite a while. 3,500 megawatts of wind power, 3,250 megawatts of pumped storage, 1,400 megawatts of oil power, and the rest was served by coal, but there was a shortfall of 13,000 megawatts that had to be met by imports. Well, those imports aren't necessarily going to be available. Germany can't depend on its neighbors to build power plants just to supply Germany, can it? Certainly not if Germany is going to be a poor customer. But yes, the Bavarian state, having failed to find private investors who are willing to put money into wind power developments, even at the present very high prices of electricity, is now proposing to build wind machines itself, which is quite interesting. And this was in the Münchener Merkur, which is probably the serious local newspaper, as opposed to the Tageszeitung or the Abendzeitung or Bild, which is a real tabloid. In the same issue, they had a big thing about how to put solar panels on your balcony, which is one of those things that is only going to look vaguely economical, even at these very high power prices. Because even if you have a south-facing balcony, which isn't obstructed by trees and other buildings and so on, which immediately counts out probably two-thirds, or if not three-quarters, of all the balconies in all the apartment buildings in the Munich area, you're still only going to get a fairly modest amount from panels you can hang off your balcony. And, you know, you might get a couple of kilowatt hours a day, which at today's prices might be worth it. But it's pretty sad, all told. Now, one of the things, of course, that we're constantly told is that, well, batteries will save us. Now, I have already expressed my doubts about this concept, simply based on the very large amount of storage required and the relatively high costs which are inherent in electrochemical storage. But there is another question. You know, I've said in the past, I don't regard electrochemical batteries as being inherently horribly dangerous. But people are being killed, and buildings are catching fire. Bad things are happening as a result of problems with batteries. And so in many cases, particularly, of course, now that contemporary Amperex Technologies of China, the world's leading manufacturer of lithium-ion batteries that go into everything from cell phones to vehicles, has announced that they have developed a new battery pack design which increases the power density from 200, or the specific power, from 250 watt-hours per kilogram to 500 watt-hours per kilogram, it's very likely that somebody, whether this be in the U.S. state governments, local governments, somebody is going to want to regulate battery installations. Certainly they're going to want to regulate the kind of installations that are powerful enough to power a house, right? Tesla power walls and that kind of thing. They're also going to want to regulate vehicle batteries, certainly car batteries, but very likely also those electric scooters and e-bikes and things of that nature. Now, I will say there is one safety advantage that the battery electric car has over the gasoline car, and that is for sewer workers. Because I talked about going down the sewer last week, and one of the informational leaflets I picked up, there was a little question, what do the sewer workers fear most? And the answer is car wrecks, because the car wrecks end with gasoline being discharged into the drains, which, of course, forms explosive vapors, and it's very dangerous for the sewer workers. Whereas battery electric vehicles don't do that. Even if they burn, they don't release liquid fuel in that way. So from the point of view of sewer workers, battery electric cars are an unmitigated blessing. But I was thinking about this business of regulation and thinking, you know, so about 100 nuclear power reactors on about 50 sites now provide, well, 65 or so sites now provide, there are single unit sites, there's not a lot of triple unit sites, but you know, if you were to assume 2 units per site, you wouldn't be far off. So about 100 nuclear power units on 50 to 60 sites now provide about 20% of U.S. electricity. So if we needed to triple U.S. electric output, and we provide all of that from nuclear, you wouldn't be looking at more than 200 to 300 sites. Now assume that we also have some of these small modular reactors, that not all the reactors are the big units close to major cities, that there's a lot of sparsely populated country that could do with much smaller reactors, not 1400 megawatt reactors, but more like 80 megawatt reactors, right? So you could probably double the number, right? We could assume somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 reactors on somewhere between, somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 sites. That's still pretty easy to regulate, right? It's still pretty easy to have enough staff to have somebody watching over each and every one of those units, right? Watching over the shoulder of the operator of each and every one of those units 24 hours a day. Even if you limit them to 6 hours per shift, it's still quite easy to find fewer than 10,000, right, highly trained, skilled, and conscientious regulators to continuously regulate the nuclear enterprise. Now, suppose instead we're going to do it all with renewable energy, with solar and wind, and lots of battery packs. Batteries ranging from multi-hundred megawatt and multi-hundred megawatt hour substation battery packs, all the way down to 20 or even 15 kilowatt hour household battery packs, which are shoved in a corner of somebody's kitchen or their utility closet. You know, the same, you know, next to and looking very much like a chest freezer. Well, regulating those is going to be a much bigger job because you're talking about hundreds of thousands or indeed quite possibly millions or tens of millions of individual sites, right? And even if you figure that you only have to visit them, you know, you're going to say, well, we annual certification of household battery packs. Still, if there are 350 million people in the U.S. and the average household size is 3.5, so you assume 100 million households, and 20% of those are wealthy enough to actually have battery packs, so we assume 20 million households. Are you going to visit 20 million households once a year to make sure that their battery packs are in working order and not posing a danger of fire? I mean, I have the impression, I mean, it's the kind of inspection, I think, that an ordinary electrician could do, but I have the impression that visiting 20 million households just once a year would probably put a strain on the electrician workforce in the United States. Assume an electrician works 300 days a year, right? And we'll fudge the numbers slightly, but so 20 million households at 300 days a year per electrician, right, would result in what? Let's see, 20 times 10 to the 6th divided by 300 would be a force of 65,000 electricians Which I believe, I may be wrong, how many electricians are there in the United States? You know, that's a good question. I know, let's find out if Google knows. How many electricians are there in the U.S.? Yes. It says there are, okay, it says, let's see, according to U.S. employment statistics, there are 1,069,933 people employed in the electricians industry. Now, that doesn't say that they're all certified electricians. Bureau of Labor Statistics says that there are, let's see, 690,000 electricians in the United States, which is, so, I guess the inspections I'm talking about would employ full-time 10% of the electricians in the United States, which is still a pretty big fraction, I think, in all fairness. I don't know. What do you think? I think that nuclear regulation is a great deal easier than regulating any of the alternatives if you want to have actual safety. I mean, this is one of the reasons, right? This is one of the reasons that central station electrification caught on. Because, of course, just before Edison's Pearl Street plant went into operation, every major building had its own plant, right? Every major building had at least one big steam engine for running the elevators and the blowers for the ventilation system and all that kind of thing. And so, of course, all those had to be inspected. They had to have, of course, firemen to feed them and people to run them and so forth, but they also had to be inspected. You know, the American Society of Mechanical Engineers was to a great extent born out of the problem of boiler explosions, not only in steamboats, not only on trains, but in buildings. And the thing is that today, you know, you may have a gas-fired or oil-fired boiler, and it may have to have a person tending it. But, in most cases, it's a low-pressure boiler, not a high-pressure boiler, the kind you'd need if you were trying to make power. And in many cases, you've got an electrically heated, fireless steam generator, which it may be expensive to run compared to one burning oil or gas, but it's also much easier to inspect and certify, and it has much lower certification requirements. In fact, it's quite interesting, about 1912, reading these popular electricity magazines, you know, that the gas companies thought that it was the end of the line for them, because with the introduction of the new tungsten filament incandescent lamp, which gave three times as much light per watt hour as the carbon filament lamp, suddenly, as an ad for GE Mazda lamps said, "Do you realize that everyone can now afford electric light? Even at 10 cents a kilowatt hour, which is like $2 or $3 a kilowatt hour in today's prices." The gas companies thought they were going out of business. And then many cities began passing smoke nuisance ordinances, which effectively banned the burning of coal and wood and fuels like that in the city limits, except perhaps in big central station power plants with very tall chimneys, so that the smoke that was emitted did not hang around at ground level. And so the gas companies, they lost the lighting market, but they gained a market for home heating and they gained a market for cooking. And so, yeah, if we're going to replace those uses with electricity, we're going to need a lot more of it. That should be obvious to anyone. But yeah, the regulation, I think, of all these electrically powered, battery-driven devices is going to be a real problem. We already see this in places where they're requiring battery electric cars, which by nature are fairly quiet, to make a nuisance noise so that people notice them and don't get hit by them. So now your, you know, part of your automobile inspection is going to be to check that it's loud enough for the safety of you know, ordinary people in the streets. I don't know. I think that a lot of things are in an unsatisfactory condition, and I want people to devote effort to shaking them out, not to attacking people who never did them any harm in the state legislatures. You know what I mean? Anyway, you've been listening to A Step Farther Out on a non-radio service of the SDF Public Access Unix System. I look forward to receiving your cards and letters right to Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America.